guys. Welcome to an episode of a podcast that we still have yet to make. This is a new show. I am the former host of Modern Marvels, and we've decided to start a new show. My name is Marshall. I've been playing Magic for about 5 years now, mainly into Modern and Legacy. And I also like to draft a lot, like to play EDH, and of course, I just love talking about Magic. Today, joining me on the show, I have two guys who are new to podcasting. First up, Kyung Chu, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your Magic background, how long you've been playing for, when you started, what you like to play. Tell us about yourself.
All right, I'm Kyung. Been playing Magic since around 7th edition, I want to say. Around then.
Okay.
I guess I'm like the filthy casual of the group. mostly play EDH, but I draft a lot. That's probably the main format I play. Yeah.
Okay.
That's really it.
Cool. Yeah, Kyung.
Short and sweet.
That's Kyung for you. Definitely the filthy casual of this group. I would say that fits you quite nicely. I think I might just call you that from now on.
The filthy casual.
And also joining us is Anthony Garitano. Why don't you tell us about your Magic background as well?
Hey, everyone. I'm Anthony. I guess I've been playing since Innistrad, so not super long. I plunged in headfirst. I'm a competitive player. I love drafting. I think Limited is probably my strongest format. But I also love Modern. Modern is the constructed format of choice that I play. Don't play a lot of Standard. But I'm also delving into Legacy and looking... eyeing towards Vintage. We'll see if my budget can support that.
But, sick. That's cool.
Maybe yeah. If you open enough fetch lands.
maybe. I'm a local grinder. I'm the guy always at PPTQ is trying to hope to make it big, but you know how that goes.
still a little bit of a dream for you, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, so that's who's on the show tonight. We're going to be talking about some Battle for Zendikar spoilers, but before I get into that, I do want to say we also have a couple other hosts that have joined us, and they were on with us during the Modern Marvels. They'll also hopefully make a comeback, namely Matt Hicks and Brian Nauman. So hopefully on a later podcast you'll get to hear those guys if you listen to Modern Marvels and you enjoyed listening to them. So. Anyway, so that brings us to our topic for tonight, and this is our one and only topic that we're going to talk about, but it's something to discuss, and that is, like I said, the Battle for Zendikar spoilers so far. So my first thought, and I'm just going to throw this out there, I don't like the fact that they took away Annihilator because everyone thought it was too broken. Like, to me, that just, like, everyone seems like they're, this is too good, it's too broken. But I'm like, if you're going to pay 15 mana for a card, it very well means you should win that game. And then I'm like, and people don't seem to understand, in my sight, like, the whole Annihilator thing was like, this is the payoff, you know? But people didn't want to, like, accept that. This is what you get for 15 mana. They couldn't accept. They didn't like having to sacrifice 6 things.
Yeah, I mean, I could kind of understand that. I didn't play this set when it was out. I think I took a break, and then I missed out on the last...
Rise of Eldrazi.
Yeah, but like I could see from like a Limited standpoint, like, you know, you have this like good game, and then someone slams this Eldrazi, and then it's just like... I don't know. Now you're just, like, super behind.
Right. Even in Modern, like, playing against Tron, like, I've done everything I can to, like, to deal with all of your threats. I'm somehow still in the game. And then you're like, oh, look, I top-decked Emrakul. You're dead. Like it's just... like, and I get that that's, like, you know, an extreme, like, Christmas land scenario. But still, like, I can't imagine... I didn't play during Rise either. And I just... I can definitely understand having, you know, playing a game of Limited. And, you know, you get stuck behind on land one turn and... Like, that's what you needed to essentially go off, but your opponent did it first. And I can, yeah. and then you, there's no coming back. There's no way to win a game in which you sacrifice six permanents. Yeah. What are you going to do? Give up your creatures to chump block the 12-12 coming at you? Like, no. Like, you're like, I need to deal with this. But then you have no more land, so you're just kind of screwed out of the game.
I can get behind that for limited, where it's almost like it's a race to, like, you know, some huge amount of mana. And I mean, then the first guy who gets the Annihilator dude into play is, like, just gonna run away with the game, because while your opponent's trying to get to 12 mana too, but if you get that, if you make them sacrifice, you know, four things first or whatever, you know, however much Annihilator was, it just, like, completely negates what he's doing, and then just because you got there first. So I could see that for limited, but like I said, for constructed, no, like, if you cast Emrakul in a game of constructed Magic where people are, like, doing all sorts of other things that are probably a lot faster. So I think for constructed, Annihilator is perfectly acceptable. But
I think what they could have done is made Annihilator not a mechanic and said just print, like, those sweet cards, but with just that mechanic without a name. You know what I mean? Like, they just have, when Emrakul attacks, that player sacrifices six permanents, kind of thing, and then limited wouldn't be as so bad.
Well, the reasoning behind having it on everything, like Mauro has said before, if your theme isn't at common, it's not your theme. So essentially, like, and you have to think about from the perspective of a player who, like, only buys booster boxes or only buys packs or, like, only plays, like, who isn't. Like, I guess it's very rare to have someone who's not, like, glued to their computer during spoiler season. But if you have that person, like, and now all they have is, like, actually opening cards, like, you would have no way to know, like, the flavor of it. And having all the Eldrazi have that, even if it's, like, an Annihilator one or two, if I recall, there in Rise there were some, like, lower level Eldrazi that had that.
Right. So if, like, I were to say, what's the main mechanic of Cons of Tarkir, what would you guys say?
Morph.
Yeah, morph.
Yeah.
Because it's, yeah, like, it was everywhere.
Right.
So, and I think the replacement mechanic they've kind of given us is, so there is Devoid, but not just that.
Ingest is the new mechanic.
Yes, there we go. Yeah. Right. And I think that's a really interesting thing.
I think it's cool, too.
Yeah, so, like, it's, like, I'm looking at Ulamog, the Ceaseless Hunger, and I guess we'll just start here since I'm looking at it. So he's a 10-10 for 10. Legendary creature Eldrazi. When you cast Ulamog, the Ceaseless Hunger, exile two permanents. Indestructible, and whenever Ulamog attacks, defending player exiles the top 20 cards of his or her library.
Right.
So the first two abilities, you know, are the indestructible keyword is awesome, obviously, because getting rid of him is nearly impossible unless you have to have some kind of exile effect.
There's no chump attacks on
right, exactly. Yes. And when you cast him, you just get rid of two things. Like, that's sweet. Secondly, the bottom ability, it seems odd. It's like, what is this doing here? Looking through the rest of the sets, which we don't have in its entirety, obviously, at this point.
So far, just to clarify, I guess, when this has been recorded, the latest thing spoiled is the Felidar. Let me pull it up real quick. The
Felidar Cub?
Yeah, Felidar Cub. The 2/2 for 2, sacrifice it to destroy an enchantment. But yeah, so continue what you were saying, Anthony.
Yeah. So there seems to be a theme with the Eldrazi that they are. I guess we've only seen one or two that are able to do this, but they are able to cast things from exile.
Mm-hmm.
When they enter the battlefield. So obviously, like Ulamog will probably kill you in two hits if he's attacking into you, but let's just even say you're able to chump block him. Like, you just have a bunch of, like, Thopters or something. And
triggers when he attacks. Like, it has no...
Right.
You know.
Exactly. Okay. So, like, one, you're going to get milled out before anything happens. But secondly, there's, like, you know, and I could definitely see in Standard there being a control deck that, you know, they plop him down, they exile the top 20 cards of your library, and then let's say you're able to deal with him, actually. like they have all these cards exiled and they have other cards in their deck that are able to be played, that are able to utilize the things that they've exiled. So it's like, oh, you're running Gaia's Revenge or something? Well, I will play a Gaia's Revenge because this Eldrazi allows me to play creature cards from that were exiled, or, you know, or whatever. I think there was the other one that lets them play lands, which I thought was really interesting. I don't know what the constructed ramifications of that are just yet. Obviously, we don't have the entire set to look at, but like that doesn't seem super potent, but I could totally see, like, you know, being able to cast an instant or a sorcery exiled. I mean, casting your opponent's Dig Through Time just seems ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
I could see them making a card like that for this set. Something big and exciting.
Dig Through Time?
Well, no, like cast, like, creatures or, like, spells like from exile.
From exile, okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, I could even see, like, you know, like, that could be super powerful, but they could also limit it. Like, maybe, so Devoid, we can talk about that mechanic real fast. I'm trying to find a card with its exact text on it. Somebody else has it pulled up already. Please feel free to.
Yeah, I got it.
Well, like, Incubator Drone is, like, 3 and blue. It has Devoid. This card has no color.
Says Devoid, and then in parentheses it says this card has no color.
Yeah.
Even though there's blue in the mana cost. So, normally in Magic, if anything has any colored mana symbols in its mana cost, it counts as those colors. Devoid is actually really just like it's just a keyword, basically, for this card is colorless. Mm-hmm. So,
it is the keyword, right?
Yes. Like I was saying, so formerly there was no keyword for this card is colorless. Like on Ghostfire, which is a card from Future Sight. Speaking of which, I think I have this speculation that Ghostfire might get printed here, but
I feel like it probably would too.
It seems like it would.
It looks like it fits in here. Yeah. But
it makes too much sense.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like Ugin's here, like the card reference is Ugin.
Yeah.
It's like a colorless card.
Anyway, so on that card,
they got to print Tombstalker in cons. Like they didn't intentionally not print it. They just forgot to put it in the set. Like
is that what they said?
Yes, I died when I read that. And you know, people were super disappointed because it was the Delve set. Yeah. The cards Future Sight with Delve should be there. But
it's okay. It's worthless now because they just have better Delve cards. But
hey, Edgar Mag Angler.
Yeah. So, but yeah. So. On Ghostfire, you know, printed on the card, it says this card is colorless. But its Oracle text may be changed to just say Devoid, which will now be the keyword for this card is colorless.
Oh, yeah. So, would they do that? Would they go back and just...
Oh, yeah, they do Oracle. They change Oracle all the time. Like, I don't have any good examples ready off the top of my head, but... But yeah, there's, I mean, especially anything, you know.
I guess like things like Hexproof or something.
Hexproof is a good example.
Or walls are, like, not that they're super prevalent, but walls. So the wall type, creature type, used to always just imply that it had Defender, and now they just always spell it out.
Yeah. Right. That's true.
So like that kind of thing. And I think because there was some weird interaction with, like, the way I think it was like maybe the 8th edition rules updates, like it caused some like craziness, and that was the solution.
Basically they've changed it's not really a new mechanic per se, they've just added a keyword to it, which is good for new players. It's kind of like, you know, it gives a name, and like Anthony, like you were saying earlier about you know, having this set have like a theme and some sort of like central understanding, especially for players who like just don't play a lot of Magic. The only Magic they really do is like maybe like the pre-release or, you know, a couple FNM events or whatever. That's kind of like when they think of this set, they can think, you know, probably Devoid or Ingest or something like that. So instead of thinking, oh yeah, that was the one where everything said this card is colorless or something, you know, some sort of boring rules text. So, I like it. It's for judges. It's kind of nice to just say it's Devoid. instead of having to say this card is colorless or whatever. But
yeah, it's interesting.
So yeah. Well, let's maybe get, you guys want to talk a little bit more about the specific cards. I know I got my eyes on a couple of neat ones. How about Gideon?
Yeah.
Gideon, yeah. Ally of Zendikar. You want me to read them out?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
so it's 2/2 white, Planeswalker Gideon. It's a mythic, of course. It's Planeswalker. He's got 4 loyalty. He's got a +1 ability. Until end of turn, Gideon, ally of Zendikar, becomes a 5/5 human soldier ally, keyword ally, creature with indestructible that's still a Planeswalker. Prevent all damage that we be dealt to him this turn. And then he's got a 0 ability that's put a 2/2 white knight ally creature token onto the battlefield. And then he's got a 3rd ability, -4. You get an emblem with creatures you control get +1/+1. So off the bat, it's definitely good. It's not like the last Gideon, I think, Return to Ravnica, which is kind of, yeah. Or no, that was Gatecrash.
Was it Gatecrash?
Yeah, it was Gatecrash, and it was like, it was cool, but it didn't really like, didn't get there. I don't think.
Yeah.
At least as far as constructed goes.
Well, it was absurd in control shells, but yeah, like,
Standard control shells at the time, but
right.
I think this will be closer to the level of the original Rise of Eldrazi Gideon, which I can't remember the exact card title off the top of my head, but that's the one where it's +2, all creatures must attack Gideon if able. And then it had a 0 ability where it became a 6/6 indestructible, and then -2, destroy target tapped creature. That was great for control. Because it came into play with 6 loyalty, you plussed him up, they had to attack it, he was probably going to live, and then it could immediately either punch your opponent back, or you could just start, you know, shooting their guys down with his minus ability if you needed to. That was 1 more mana, and he came into play with 6 loyalty, but this is in that direction, I think, so.
Yeah, I definitely see this being in more aggressive shells. So, like, if it's early game, like, you're actually playing him on turn 4, it's totally feasible to just plus up and then slam him with a 5/5. You're probably in some kind of red-white shell. You're probably, you know, if you're in standard, you're playing, like, Hordling Outburst and things.
White-green is a...
That's an option, too. Yeah, you could, you know...
I mean, we'll see, of course. We have no idea.
This is all speculation, yeah. Obviously. Like, I don't have a deck list in mind or anything. Yeah. But, I could totally see... The reason why I see this in some kind of aggro shell is early game, he punches hard. Like kind of mid game, he helps you build up your board state. And like, let's say you have a ton of dudes and you just really want to close the game out. He's not a bad top deck because you play him and then you just immediately minus him. All your guys instantly get +1/+1 permanently. And it's important to note, which I'm sure everyone is aware of, emblems can't be destroyed. And like, that's a major problem in the token strategy in Modern, for instance. Like, that's one of the things that actively keeps it from being a good deck is, like, the thing that makes your guys bigger can be permanently removed.
Yeah, it can be abrupt decay. That's just, like, one of the things I like about emblems for Constructed is, like, this is a benefit that you know will just not be touched.
Right.
I do think that is interesting, though, that you said this is definitely a little bit more, like, Constructed playable or aggro. Sorry, not. I think we already kind of established that this will be good for Constructed. It's unlike the last Gideon that was good. This is better in aggro, whereas the previous one was good for control decks because the previous one was good in control because it magnetized all the aggro threats onto Gideon. And then he could fight back the following turn, whereas this is just like, yeah, you want to, like, I'm going to curve out, play this 4/4 or 5/5 for 4, and then, you know, if you don't deal with it quickly, it's going to generate some sort of advantage if being a 5/5 isn't already, like, good enough for your board or whatever it is. So,
right.
Probably exactly. A really great curve topper for any sort of white aggro deck and Constructed. Probably just standard, but I don't know. We'll see.
You don't think he'd be good for a controlling kind of deck?
No. Just because, I mean, look at his abilities. Yeah, like I said, the previous Gideon, it immediately hedged the bleeding from, like you said, your opponent's creatures, because his ability made all creatures attack Gideon. And then, like I said, you could, on the following turn, assuming he was still alive, you could use his minus two ability to start killing creatures, which is what Control wants to do. Whereas this is like...
He doesn't really remove creatures.
Yeah, but... he doesn't remove creatures. He either creates more creatures or makes them bigger through his emblem ability, or just is a creature if he needs to be. So yeah.
He seems pretty good. Like, 4 mana cost seems very, like, I don't know, it seems like a good cost for, like, Planeswalker.
Right. Yeah. My understanding is, like, so he is the same mana cost of Elspeth Knight Errant, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it saw a lot of play when she was in Standard, you know, and she frequents some modern fringe decklist.
Yeah, there was, Jund was the big deck to play at the time, so it was kind of overshadowed by that. But yeah, still, you know, Elspeth Knight Errant is definitely still constructed playable, both in modern Legacy today. Usually only as like a one of, and you know, sometimes just as like a sideboard card, but this could definitely, do you think this would see main board play in modern or Legacy, you think, Anthony?
it would have to be in something extremely aggressive, and there aren't really any aggro decks right now. I don't see this seeing any play in Legacy. It's just not high impact enough.
Right.
I don't. Maybe this sees play in some kind of like Zoo Shell. The only issue is like those kinds of decks like really want to be playing something like Collected Company right now, or Court of Calling, and maybe not Court, but mostly Collected Company. And like Gideon obviously doesn't fit that. I don't know. That being said, like they do seem to be playing Domri like somewhat. So maybe he kind of replaces that. It's not an invalid strategy to be like turn one Wild Nacatl, turn two Goyf, like turn three put more one drops into play, and then turn four like
like the abrupt decay ordeal, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I think it could be like. You know, there's a couple of mono white aggro decks that could probably put this in place of sometimes they're playing like Hero Bladehold, or like sometimes they're playing Elspeth Knight-Errant as well. It's probably about on par with Elspeth Knight-Errant, right. I think. So
I think he actually like would probably fight the most with Sorin in some kind of black white deck. By Sorin Solemn Visitor. And it's just interesting, like, so the tokens that he generates are bigger, which is something that I always can, like, that's one of the frustrations that I had with either version of Sorin, either Sorin Solemn Visitor or Sorin Lord of Innistrad. Lord of Innistrad generates 1/1 lifelinkers, and Solemn Visitor generates 1/1 flyers. The issue I've always had is that their bodies just seem kind of irrelevant in the long run of the game, especially if they can deal with Sorin before you can start using him to make the +1/+0 portion of him, because that's when they become important. But a 2/2 is generally still relevant like throughout the rest of the game, because even if you end up having to chump block with another creature, its body size is usually large enough.
Exactly, it can at least to matter. Right, you can at least somehow maybe trade for something, especially if you also have like it with a lightning bolt, or even if you just have 2/2s, sometimes that's good enough to trade with a Tarmogoyf for, you know, something like that. Anyway, let's move on from Gideon. Someone want to introduce the dual lands?
I'll do it.
Sure.
All right, so first,
you don't have to read them all out, just kind of give us a gist of what they are.
Oh, well, they've only shown 5 so far, right?
Yes.
And they're ally color dual lands with the, what's that, subtext? Or subtype?
Yeah, subtype.
With the basic land types that they represent. So like Prairie Scream's like a plain island, and it enters the battlefield tapped unless you control two or more basic lands.
So first,
so the first thing,
well, just real quick, when I first read these, I didn't see the subtype, and I was just like, isn't that just like a worse like Czech land, like Glacial Fortress and Drowned Catacombs, that sort of stuff? Like, that's what I thought at first, and I was like, yeah, that actually definitely changes when you notice that the subtype is actually their corresponding.
They're fetchable.
Yeah, they're land types. Yeah,
right.
They're
fetchable. And just to spell that out, you can get these with the fetch land, which is what makes them deserve the priority status. I've been thinking about these all day today, actually. These are this is a really, really interesting design, and I've been trying to see like how I can make this work in like an eternal format. And
I think
and I don't
you
know
and everyone else is in that same boat, or like, how can I like do this?
Right.
It's too slow.
I don't. Well, it's not that it's too slow. It's the restriction of the basic land type.
Yeah.
So, like, for instance, I think Blue Moon in Modern automatically plays these because they...
well, do they? Because they don't have, like, a... Deck. Blue Moon is a blue-red deck, and there currently isn't a blue-red...
Oh, that's a totally valid point. I just... Like, I was so excited about these. I didn't even pay attention to that.
Yeah. But no, like, it could be... They could, like, do a color splash, maybe, or if somehow there's a deck like that that would prefer to play a lot of basic lands but is also playing, like, a secondary color, they could totally benefit from these, for sure, so.
Right.
But, yeah, outside that, it's tough to, like, see how it's... They'll be played in Standard just because Standard always just... They just play with the dual lands that they have access to, and these will be it.
I mean, they play temples right now.
And yeah,
like,
they're playing
those aren't
temples.
Fetchable, right. But like they're still good enough.
Yeah, yeah. Usually, comes into play tapped for Standard is just fine.
Yeah.
Even if it didn't have any abilities, like, you know, the temples. Obviously, they have the scry ability, which is I think is really cool, and I wish it was just a little stronger for. You know, Modern Legacy, and it's they see some play, but I don't think, from what I can tell, I don't think they'll be added into Modern and Legacy. They'll definitely be great for, like, EDH.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
As the filthy casual.
As the filthy casual. But.
So what's interesting to me is that you are rewarded for playing a two-color deck. Because if you're three colors, you
can't, like,
yeah.
You
right.
just had
so,
to
like,
have
you're
all
having
your other
to
mana
use...
fixing, like.
Right. So, like, in Standard, you're talking about using either the Trilands from Cons
or
the,
even
the
just
pain
like,
lands, like Caves or Coelios and things like that.
Well,
which
no,
obviously,
people even play, like, Jungle Hollows and the common comes into play tapped game one life.
Yeah.
People are
right,
even playing
right,
those.
Right, exactly.
Like,
yeah. Right, because you need that kind of fixing for a three color deck. Like
right.
You have to be able to reliably determine if you can get reliably get your mana correct. Otherwise, like it doesn't matter how awesome Seed Rhino is. Like if you can't get white, green, black, it doesn't matter.
It's like you'll wait a turn if you have to. Like, but it's
right.
You need to have the colors available in the following turn to get it out.
Right.
So. Oh, so you guys don't think you'd be playing a three colored deck?
No.
I mean, like, wouldn't, like, being able to, like, fetch for them be, like, pretty good? If they're playing, like, lands that tap and gain you one life.
Well, here's how I'm, like, envisioning it. So, like, let's say I'm playing Modern Jund, right? So, first turn...
Oh, you mean for Modern?
Well, even in, like, Standard, I don't know, we'll see. But, so, for... In Modern, for sure, like, I'm gonna need to cast Liliana... on turn three. I know that for a fact if I'm playing Jund. So first turn I'm gonna like crack, you know, my Verdant Catacombs, get a probably an Overgrown Tomb. If I'm playing Thoughtseize, I might just get just a swamp. But on that second turn I'm probably gonna need to cast Tarmogoyf, but I know on the following turn I'm gonna need to cast Liliana, so I'm probably inclined to get an Overgrown Tomb for turn two. And that already means that if I play a land on turn three, if it's one of these, it's going to come into play tapped, and I can't cast my Liliana.
Right.
Just because the first two lands I got, one of which was a shock, and the other was a basic. And there's going to be a lot of cases where you don't even have that option, where your starting hand is like, you only have one fetch, you have one actual shock in your hand, so you have an Overgrown Tomb, and then you have, like, I don't know, Canopy Vista, which is the green-white one. You can't cast Liliana on curve because one of your lands... you could get a basic with Verdant, but unfortunately the Overgrown Tomb is still just a non-basic, so, mm-hmm. you know. So that's the issue I see for, like, Modern, is where, you know, things are played pretty low to the ground in our, you know, Modern Legacy, so I don't think it'll be tough to work out for those formats. I think it could definitely do, you know, work at, like, an Anthony said, for, like, Blue Moon. You know, a deck that's primarily two colors, even in Modern, I think that could work out, but I don't know.
Going back to your point, Kyung, about maybe this replaces some of the, I don't know what they're calling them now, like they're refuges from the original Zendikar, like where they come into play tapped and they gain you a life.
Right.
These might be just strictly better than those because, I shouldn't say strictly better, but they're fetchable, which is important. And those lands, so the gain life lands, were going to come into tapped anyways, and these are fetchable. So you don't have to make a choice between, like, being able to cast your Rakshasa Death Dealer or your Fleecebane Lion. Like you get to have both. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I know Abzan Aggro is not really Languish has kind of killed that deck off, but just using that as an example. You know, like, it definitely allows your mana base to be more consistent. And I think it's, again, so just kind of harping on Kyung's point, the floor is we have a land that's not fetchable and it always comes into play no matter what. Here we have a land that I can get with a fetch land and it might come into play untapped. Like, the benefit of that, I think, far outweighs the possible life gain. You know, maybe if you're the control deck, you want the tap land. Like, heck, those decks were playing Radiant Fountain just for the life, you know? It was important to what they do.
Do you think they'd replace temples with these lands?
Well, they don't have a choice because the temples will be rotating. So for standard,
I think that is probably what actually happens. Kyung is these just fill in slots of the temples automatically. Yeah. We're not. I wonder if we're gonna get the rest of the cycle in the next set.
That's the thing. I imagine it's like, that's kind of up in the air right now. So it's like
right.
Hard to say.
Like, so I think it was Sam Stoddard a couple years ago, or maybe it was just a year and a half ago or so, in an article he said they don't like to do incomplete cycles anymore.
Right.
So, like, the fetch lands being reprinted is something that, like, the Onslaught fetches being reprinted in Khan's block is something that, you know, like, where they brought that up, where, like, they try not to do something like that often. And you can even see, like, while it won't be standard legal, we are getting fetch land reprints. The original Zendikar fetchland reprints, we're getting them in this set. So it's kind of cool that they quote unquote completed the cycle, even if it doesn't make it stand legal. Right. You know, I thought that was impressive.
I think they needed it. I will say on that note where they've done it this way, where they've put it in standard legal packs, but it's not standard legal. I kind of wish they had, you know, they would take advantage of that option more. I don't know. I think if they did it too much, it would just be bad for the game overall. But anyway, that's just like a small thing I wanted to point out.
Well, actually, I'd like to discuss that more, just like the concept in general. I think that this is awesome. Like, how cool is this? Like, it's, you know, in the original Zendikar block, what did they call it? Hidden Treasure,
I think. Hidden Treasures. Yep.
Yeah. So the original couple, like possible in your pre-release kits, and then some of the earliest boxes, like booster boxes printing and cases. Yeah, that's probably the best way to phrase it. Is the first print run of Zendikar. Some of them contained cards from older sets. So all the way up to Alpha, you could absolutely have opened an Alpha Black Lotus in your Zendikar pre-release kit.
Or, like, Island of Whack Whack, which one of our local players, I can't remember his name at the moment, but anyway, he opened it. He, of all things, He opened an island of Whack Whack in as part of his hidden treasure.
I've never heard of that card.
It's from Arabian Nights. It is a land. It says tap to reduce target flying creature's power to zero. It does not tap colorless mana. This is all it does.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Is this worth anything?
It is worth $35.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was like next to worthless, but I guess.
Well, so it's from its only printing is Arabian Nights, and it was an uncommon.
It wasn't in Chronicles.
No, it was not in Chronicles.
Okay, yeah, that's probably why it's worth $35. Right.
But even if it were,
so it's still a treasure.
Arabian Nights tend to be have higher price things. This is actually rarer than a rare in any regularly printed set, just based on the number of players that were playing at the time.
Yeah, it was. It's still something, you know, but
it's not a black lotus.
Like, right, it's not exciting.
Could have gotten a dual land, you know, but instead you got an island of Whack Whack.
I
just the name, like, is already just really insulting.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Anyway. Totally. So yeah, those fetch lands, man. That's gonna be.
Yeah.
There's a few things they could have done to make people buy this set more than that.
Yeah.
Right. So just to spell it out for the listeners, there will be randomly inserted into Battle for Zendikar booster packs full art reprints of both the original Zendikar fetchland, so like Arid Mesa, Verdant Catacombs, Misty Rainforest.
I heard that also includes the Onslaught fetches as well. Is that true?
Oh, I don't know.
I think that's so, like, what they... I mean, there's no confirmation.
Twitter feed, and I don't... Like, there was a video of Mauro at PAX. So just to even clarify further, all of these spoilers are coming from PAX Prime, which happened this past weekend.
So it's technically not the mothership, but it did come from Mark Rosewater. So.
Oh, no, it did come from the mothership. This is a WotC-sponsored event. Like, they had a huge thing going this weekend. So, like, Mauro himself, you know, like, represent, like, as, like, officially, like, in WotC capacity, was, you know, announcing a lot of this stuff. So we're getting Zendikar Fetchland reprints and some of the Shocklands as well. So just Steam Vent specifically has been unveiled.
So what I'm thinking, or what I think they implied, is that they plan on doing all 10 of both. It's part of...
Okay.
But I don't know, like, it's they still haven't technically, like, clarified that yet, I don't think.
Right.
So
what they have specified is that these will be at essentially mythic level rarity. I've seen some information where it said that it's the equivalent of a mythic rare foil.
Yes.
I don't specifically know. I guess
in place of some of the foil mythic rares, there will be one of these instead.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
I'll take it.
So, sure, these will be very rare, but they, if you have not seen them yet, I highly encourage you just go do a quick Google search or go to Wizards Twitter feed, which is Wizards_magic. These cards are gorgeous. I will personally be collecting these. Like, I'm not a huge collector. I'm not a kind of person. Like, I don't typically seek out foils of anything.
But these are
amazing.
Yeah.
This is definitely something that I want to have in my collection. In fact, the art that's on these, it's all new art, by the way. Sorry, I should probably have specified that. That's the most important part, is it's not any of the art for the Shocklands. It's not any of the original Ravnica or Return to Ravnica art. For instance, Arid Mesa is completely different from the last Zendikar block, and they just look gorgeous. Like, I would actually like to own prints of some of these. They're just gorgeous. They're really well done.
It looks like they're also printing the cycle from this set too, the double check.
Yeah, the
we're calling them.
Okay, so yeah, the one that they plan on putting in the set is part of this Zendikar Expeditions, is what they've called it, as well. Just full art lands for more people, for more Magic players to drool over, I guess. But
right, so it seems like we'll have.
Oh, and
three different cycle, ten, three different cycles of lands that can be had. Yeah,
so it's 45 lands total,
right?
Is what they have confirmed that much. I assume
45 lands.
Yes. I assume they'll do the 10 fetches, the 10 shocks. I guess we could.
Are there 10 of these new ones?
Well, there obviously there hasn't been 10 of spoiled, but I guess that could imply that there's 10 of these new ones. Then that leaves another 10 cycle, and I'm thinking maybe like the Zendikar Manland cycle, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Where did you see that they said that there would be 45 lands total in Battle for Zendikar, or do you mean split up between?
Yeah, it was 20, 20 in like one set and 25 in the other. I think.
Oh, okay, gotcha. That's a lot for one set. Holy cow!
That would totally throw off the foil mythic ratio too. That'd just be like,
more sense.
So yeah, opening one of these would be like, well, I took home a $150 bill today. You know.
So I guess they'll do the first five for this set and the next five for the other set, and the manlands in the next.
I guess so. As far as I'm, no one really knows that for sure. Which probably caused a lot of argument online, I'm sure, because people like to do that.
Oh yeah, I haven't even looked at the comment section of any of this yet. It's just,
Nah, do not want. But yeah, so, that's I might just pay cash to just have one of them in my deck,
I have at least one of each. No matter what the cost is, I'm going to get one of each.
I will give you my money for this.
Right. No matter what the cost, I don't want to spend, $200 a piece on these or whatever, but I don't see them being that price. I see them being special, but not quite that special. If they are that price, I will own any of them.
I think there'll be at least 100, especially for the Zendikar fetches. But I don't know. We'll see.
You think these Zendi fetches will affect the price on the?
No, because think about it. It's foil mythics is what's affecting the print run. It might bring down the price a little, but it's not a significant enough print run to really impact how many of these are actually available.
Yeah.
Right.
Not everyone's going to be opening these up.
Right. Not everyone's going to have one of these in their tray binder. Unlike Khan's fetches right now, those are, open up anyone's binder at FNM and you'll find at least one of those in their binder.
You think there'll be enough in circulation to satisfy people that have been demanding these reprints, or you think people still will want more?
No, when you say want more, this is not a normal print run. Mm-hmm. So this is not going to meet the demand that exists for say Verdant Catacombs or, Scalding Tarn. If you're looking, if you're trying to get into Modern or Legacy Delver and you want Scalding Tarns, I don't see it directly impacting the price. Historically, if you look back, any kind of special print run, like a Judge Foil or even Serum Visions as an FNM promo. We're hitting the end of August. I think this past Friday would have been the fourth. Yeah. If you go look at, TCG Player Low, the regular original Serum Visions print run has not really lowered in price that much. I mean, those things are still you can find a deal.
Still too much.
Anywhere between, $8 for a common. And it makes sense. A lot of people are outraged by it. I get it. But it's $8 because it was a common in a set when there were 500,000 Magic players in the world. And now we have 22 million or something like that. Those aren't real numbers. The 22 million is actual WotC number they've put out. I don't know how many people were playing Magic.
Know how many people were playing Magic during Fifth Dawn?
Kyung,
you played during Fifth Dawn. How many people were playing Magic back then?
I don't even know.
Exactly.
Do they even have data on that back then?
That's a good question.
That
we couldn't answer.
I just bought Magic cards.
I'm pretty sure WotC does. They just haven't released it.
Right.
So anyways, my point was, it makes sense why Serum Visions is so expensive. It has one print run in a set that there's just not a lot of it left today because it's been saturated. Everybody needs them. So it's, you know, and if it were to be reprinted, like Telling Time, for instance, was like a card that got to like $6. And then they reprinted it at Modern Masters 2, and that thing is worth a quarter. Like, any edition is worth a quarter, you know?
Telling Time was at $6?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
Right.
Even that's why you're a filthy casual, Keel.
That's why I'm a filthy casual.
Yeah.
Hey, filthy casuals usually know the price of their cards. We play all these crazy formats.
Oh, true.
These random expensive cards.
Like, that random EDH card. Like, Kyung, what's the price of Journeyer's Kite?
I don't think that's worth much. I want to say it's like less than $2.
I was totally kidding, by the way.
What's foil profit of Krufix worth?
Oh, man. I don't know about foils.
Misery, right? The card is absurd.
Card is too strong.
Yeah. Card it's good, sweet. For sure.
My favorite card.
But, yeah, there's little to no doubt. I think that this will just not have effect on overall prices for Zendikar fetches.
Mm-hmm.
So
I didn't think they would.
I think we can just make that known.
So people
don't get your hopes up.
People still probably be complaining for fetch lands.
Oh yeah,
there this will not satisfy their cravings for fetch lands.
So continuing with our lands topic, though, as most folks know by now, we're getting full art basics in the set, and we're getting some of the original Zendikar full arts reprinted, but there will be most of them are new, and they look pretty sweet. Noah Bradley's got some. If you're a Noah Bradley fan, they're here.
I'm a huge fan of Noah Bradley, actually. Also did Drown in Sorrow, Anger of the Gods. Yeah. I'm a fan.
These are just...
They're being printed in like the fat packs too, right?
Yes.
So booster boxes, fat packs. Have they confirmed if it's going to be in the holiday gift box or not?
I don't even know.
I don't know.
And the reason why I bring that up is normally that's not usually a good purchase. It's like $25. I think you get, what, 4 or 5 booster packs, 50 lands, and then there's usually some kind of promo card.
Right.
The boxes themselves are just okay. However, if you wait until after Christmas, you can, like, I found one for like $12. That's actually a decent deal. Like, that's the price of the boosters that you're buying. You get a storage container, and like, and if there are full art lands, like, you should auto buy that. Like, it will just, I mean, because you're getting full art Zendikar or Battle for Zendikar lands, and they're gorgeous. Duh, you know.
Say that they were. Hold on. I'm checking the thing. 5 Battle for Zendikar booster packs, storage box, 20 Battle for Zendikar basic lands. So I don't know, actually. Doesn't really say.
Okay. Well, yeah, so lands are obviously a big part of Zendikar. I'm glad they've decided to make sure that they establish that again here, so I'm looking forward to it. One thing, so I want to bring up one more thing before we wrap up the show. One thing I want to discuss, what is this looking like for limited? Because all three of us are limited players here, so we can kind of, shed some light on that. How do we think, so one question that I know I had in mind is, on a previous episode of Limited Resources, LSV compared, he put a number scale on how fast the formats were, because he wanted to say, like, Origins was like a 3, which I would agree with. It's pretty fast. Origins. So Zendikar was a 1, and in the same block, you had Rise of Eldrazi at 10, being the slowest format he had ever played. So I wanted to ask you guys, what do you think this is kind of, what do you think it looks like so far? I know we don't have a whole lot here, but
yeah, I feel like I can't make an accurate assessment with what we've seen so far. I mean,
I agree.
Just what we've seen so far, it looks pretty slow. A lot of things are like 5 or more mana that have been spoiled.
Yeah.
But
I mean, we have some Eldrazi.
Yeah, we
that
we
already have, right. is inclination right. for it to be slow. But you were saying, Anthony?
Yeah, so all we've really seen so far are the Eldrazi or rares, and you know, like your rares, your rare guys tend to be like really big, you know, right. Like or we've seen the flashy ones, a very Timmy like card, like yeah. Orin Reef Hydra, you know, it's just 6 mana, 6/6 with trample and it's landfall. 5/5. Yeah, 5/5 landfall. It comes in, it gets a +1/+1 counter. If that land was a forest, it gets 2+1/+1 counters instead. So like. You know, if I were to just see that, I'd say, oh, maybe this format's a little slower. But I agree with Young. We have not seen enough to really have an idea of its speed.
Be sweet to have that Hydra in limited with a fetch land.
Oh right. Oh man, that would be ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm pretty excited. I wanted to also comment on Devoid. I think Devoid was a very flavorful way to communicate what the Eldrazi are while still allowing limited to be balanced. You know, so the Eldrazi are in Flavorland, they're colorless. So like they like have transcended all colors of mana, like I think is the storyline behind that. I think but that's very hard to put into a card because you can't make a 2/2 Eldrazi because a 2/2 for 2 colorless automatically goes in every single deck because that's the baseline for a card in limited and you're super happy to have that. However, so by allowing you to attach color mana symbols, which require you to, like, you know, for Incubator Drone, it's 3 and a blue for 2/3, and it has Devoid. So it allows you to capture that flavor feel while still allowing you to build in a color identity into the mechanics of the game.
Right, which is integral to the game.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So, like, for instance, I believe in, like, Rise, most of the Eldrazi were very high-priced. Like as far as mana cost,
pretty much it was just like they had like the Eldrazi spawn dudes, which were fitting to, you know, green, black, and red, I believe. Mm-hmm. But the actual Eldrazi themselves were always just colorless,
so, right?
Yeah,
and you couldn't really make a lower cost at Eldrazi again, like I said, because of the colorless mana cost. So right. I think this is a flavorful way to capture that. And still allow everything to be balanced in a way that you desired. Yeah,
I agree with that. And just looking at, I also like to point out, just from the aesthetic, it's really great as well. So like the borders and all the cards, like they're colorless, but they have like the
kind of full art kind of.
Yeah, they have like the thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have, like, the color lining up at the little pattern, which looks cool, too. So,
yeah.
One card I wanted to point out, someone had posted on Facebook earlier today, pointing out that Mist Intruder was a strict upgrade to Stormcrow. yet foil Stormcrows are still, 7th edition foil Stormcrow is $24.
Oh, God.
So,
it's only 24 for foil
7th edition Stormcrow. Yeah,
I thought there were more.
Well, it is.
Wasn't it over 100 at some point
for foil Stormcrow?
Maybe someone's just trolling. I don't know.
I hope not.
Probably.
Do you know what Stormcrow is, Kyung? I mean, I know you're a filthy casual, but
yeah, the most overpowered card in Magic.
Yeah, man. But, well, now Tamagoyf.
Well, see, that could also mean this format is a little more aggressive. It's got your Mist Intruder as the replacement Stormcrow, and it's even got Ingest, so.
I don't know,
man,
if that's aggressive.
Mist Intruder is just an awful card in general. Like, I never want, even with flying, I don't want a 1/2. Like,
I wouldn't say it's awful. Like, I feel like what I'm excited for limited in this set is Ingest and what they're going to do with it.
Right.
And I feel like they're going to do something like pretty.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think Mist Intruder's value will be hinged on whatever you can do with Ingest.
Yeah.
So like if you have something that allows you to cast creatures that have been exiled from your opponent's library, then like maybe it's good. Which would be weird. It's like kind of like an inverse of Manifest in a way. I don't know. And Manifest was always a wonky mechanic to me in Limited because you didn't have control over it. You know, you're like, oh, there went my only removal spell. I'm so sad.
Tragic.
I've done that.
Right.
Or just like I needed my 6/6 morph guy, and instead I just got a land.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And I wonder if, like, they'll... I guess we haven't seen this. Are they going to give a number to ingest? Like, ingest 4? Like, and then you exile 4 cards? Or is it always...
Well, just, see, and that's what, just... what perturbed me a little bit about Ulamog. He's... Because basically he ingests 20. But instead it just says... I mean, it is whenever he attacks, which is different, because the ingest is whenever this creature deals combat damage.
They have to connect with ingest. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so that's going to be... That would be the difference, then, is because it's a trigger on attack.
Right. Yeah, so I don't understand why they didn't just, like, include...
A number?
Yeah, or... I don't understand why they... Well, I can understand why. Obviously, there's a good... There's... power balance needs to be kind of balanced there, but yeah, I was kind of like, why couldn't they just like put a number on it? I don't know.
Well, we'll see. Because ingest is only when you deal damage, and Ulamog is on trigger, so you can't write ingest 20, because then he'd have to attack. Like, he'd actually have to deal the damage in order for that to happen.
True.
But I mean, like, having like ingest 2 seems like pretty good. Like, if you had like multiple creatures with ingest attacking an opponent a turn, I feel like you could just mill them out pretty quickly.
All right, yeah, which is really intriguing, because so mill has always been a weird strategy with Wizards, and they've, you know, been very open about how it's like, it's a win condition, but it's always been very bad in general. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes, like, maybe an an M14, you can get like a Tome Scour deck or whatever. Like,
Sphinx's Tutor.
Or you could just cast Opportunity targeting your opponent. And...
Yeah. Times in a row. Okay.
Good times.
But, so, you know, it's like the issue with Mill is like, it's always on some kind of effect that doesn't impact the board. So, like, whether it's Millstone, which is where the name Mill comes from. Right. Or even like in Origins Limited, you can potentially build the Sphinx's Tutelage deck and try to like hope to mill out that way. But both of those cards both of those examples, those cards don't impact the board. So if your opponent is like, you know, just Tobin Freeblade after Tobin Freeblade, like, you're going to die unless you deal with it. So this is interesting, because ingest requires combat in order for you to do things. So it almost, like, it really encourages you to play aggressively. So you just want to, like, punch, 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 punch. And you're not even concerned with the amount of damage that you're doing. You're just looking to hit them. Obviously, like, to do the math, you'd end up needing creatures that have more than just ingest. Like, WotC would need to enable assigning a number, so like ingest 5 or ingest 4. Otherwise, you would end up dealing, like, 20 points of damage by the time you've, like, that would be faster than actually milling them.
Right.
So maybe it's... I doubt that they're, like, pushing towards a mill strategy. However, it should be noted that it is a possibility. Especially you know,
limited.
Right. So you have a 40-card deck, and you start off with 7 in your hand, so, you know, 33 cards are left in the library.
Ulamog is pretty... It's like a 1.
Yeah, Ulamog attacks and you're basically dead. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you're already pretty dead, because it's 10/10 indestructible.
Right.
And he just exiled 2 of your permanents.
Yeah. It's pretty much like Dragon Lord Atarka, this set, is what it's kind of looking up to be. Except it's 10 mana, which we just had to, like, assume will be doable in this set.
It's probably doable. I mean, if you could cast Eldrazi before...
Right, like I said, they're going to make sure that you can cast it.
They called it, like,
Battle Cruiser.
The giant from Journey, the 10-mana giant, the red-red. what's that called?
Yeah, that was...
It's like... crap. The Filthy Casual, too. I should know this.
Yeah, right? Bear of the Heavens.
Yes.
That
was like,
oh, I got him, and then they're like, that's fine, you're dead, I've already killed you.
Already lost. Like, what are you hoping to accomplish by
with the 10?
I don't know, that was funny. Obviously, that was just like geared towards constructed or, you know, EDH primarily. But
yeah,
if anything, I don't. Is that confirm or deny, Keong? Is that like a thing that people do in EDH? Is play?
I haven't seen too many people play with that card, but I could see ways of
abusing it.
Abusing it, yeah.
Kind of like Worldfire. Worldfire is banned in EDH, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's banned in EDH. I mean, like, you could play, like, a... what's it called? Faith Reward, I guess, after you kill your own thing.
Wombo combo.
Yeah, that seems bad.
Yeah. Yeah, so... But, yeah, no... I don't know. So it looks like it could be faster. It looks like it could be slow because it's kind of like it looks like.
I feel like it could be.
It kind of like splits with what we've got so far.
I mean, like cards like Forerunner of Slaughter seems like a pretty aggressive card.
Right, and then they have like, you know, your Omnath, Locus of Rage.
Yeah.
Which is like a huge late game payoff card for sure. So.
Right.
Yeah, they probably make it. You could go a couple different ways.
Yeah.
If you want to be,
we'll see. It could be like Innistrad, where we got like tons of sick archetypes, and they all.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah, that would be. That's what we hope for, I think.
The Ingest archetype.
Yeah. Hopefully, we'll see. We have yet to see. We get some more spoilers from the Mothership tomorrow. This is Sunday, by the way.
So. Probably they'll probably be spoiling things that PAX all weekend, right?
Yeah.
Or. Wait, was tomorrow's... Wait, today's
tomorrow's
last...
Monday.
Right. Oh, so today was the last day, huh?
Yeah, so today would be the last day of PAX, but I don't know. They may... I don't know if they'll continue spoilers this week or if we'll see some. Usually, and I was talking to Kyung a little bit...
Well, the set comes out at the end of September, right? So...
Is it? I thought it was October. Like,
well,
early
beginning
it was
of
like
October.
September 29th? Like the...
It could be the...
It's, first a little googling to
pre-release
is September 26th.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So then the official release is October, early October.
Okay,
right. So what they typically do is it's 3 weeks of spoilers and then everything is released the Friday, essentially a week before pre-release.
Before pre-release, yeah.
So if pre-release before. is Saturday the 26th, you know, and a lot of stores do midnight pre-releases, that means that all spoilers will be unveiled Friday the 18th. So usually we get like a couple cards every single day, and then we get all of the, usually all the rares get spoiled, and then uncommons, the rest of the uncommons and commons get spoiled on the final Friday that are left out.
Yeah.
Or left out, rather.
But, so what, I was talking to Kyung a bit before the show about... they always do spoilers on Labor Day weekend. Like, it's like a huge spoiler, usually, where they, like, just drop a huge bomb. So, last year's, for example, was the Allied Colored Fetch Lands. And every year for Labor Day weekend, I go to the beach with my family, and I'm the only Magic player in my family. And so, they release these spoilers, and it's, like, Christmas, but... There's no one to like for me to celebrate Christmas with, really, because it's just like me and my family, and I'm like, oh my god! I remember like, and this has happened every year for like the past 4 years, like, you know, with Return to Ravnica, it was the Shocklands with, I can't remember what it was for Theros, but anyway, oh, for Theros it was Thoughtseize, that was a big one.
Yeah,
that was. That was magic Christmas, Labor Day for me that year. And then the past year was the Fetchlands. Who see? Well, I can't talk. We'll see what we get for this year for Labor Day. I think the Zendikar Expeditions thing was a pretty huge bomb, but yeah. We'll see if we'll get another bomb this upcoming weekend. However, Brian will be joining me this particular Labor Day weekend, so I will have someone to geek out with this
You'll
year.
You'll have Christmas.
Yeah, we'll get great. To celebrate Christmas. Brian and I will together. But All right. Well, I think that's been plenty of discussion for Battle for Zendikar for what we have so far. Of course, we've only had like 30 cards to talk about, and it already I'm pretty excited.
Yeah.
So.
Me too.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for joining us on this podcast. Again, my name is Marshall. Again, joining me tonight, Keon and Anthony. Say goodnight, guys.
Good night.
See you guys later. Thanks for listening.
All right. And we hope you'll join us on the next episode. Thanks, and have a good night.